This is the fifth of a series of webinars on green and sustainable remediation. The title is on U.S. and EU perspectives on green and sustainable remediation. Welcome, everybody. Appreciate your finding the time to join us. We have a good bit of registration. We're pretty much at capacity. So thank you for joining us. A little bit of housekeeping before we get started. Very important for those of you on the phone lines, please do keep your phones on mute so we can have silent lines. We will be having a question and answer session, at which point you're welcome to take your phone off mute and ask your question. If you don't have a mute button, remember star six will mute your phone. And to take it off mute, you can hit pound six. Those are universal mute and unmute buttons. So again, it's star six and pound six. Again, welcome everybody. My name is Carlos Pachon. I'm with the U.S. EPA. And you're here to participate on the U.S. and EU perspectives on green and sustainable remediation, a fifth webinar. At this point, I hope you all have had a chance to get to the registration page where you have seen a link to some of the previous webinars, 1 through 4 we have had on this topic. Those are archived, and you are free to listen to them and go through the slides and contact the speakers from those events at any time. You should be now on the first slide, which has the banner of the Clue and Cleanup information website. And again, it's the welcome slide, or with the names of the speakers, and that's where we will be starting from. So we could go to slide number one, please. Again, this is a bit of housekeeping we'll have to take care of. Sorry, now we're in slide number two. As I said earlier, for those of you on the phone lines, please keep your phones on mute and do not put this call on hold. If you do not have a mute button on your phone, you can press star six to mute and pound six to unmute. To move through the slides, as the speakers call the slide they're on, you can use the navigation buttons at the top of the screen. At any point, you can click the question mark. You'll get a little pop-up box, and you can type in a question or observation you have. As a moderator, I'll be handling those questions during the question and answer session. So feel free to type in a question at any time. This event is being recorded and will be archived, and audio and as well as the presentation will be jointly archived. In about a week's time, that archive will be posted, and you can email it to any colleague who you think may want to participate after the event takes place. Okay, let's go to slide number three, please. So this is the opening slide of the webinar content itself, U.S. and EU perspectives on green and sustainable remediation, part five. This is a webinar that we have organized to reflect the agenda of the upcoming meeting in Vienna. The goal of this webinar is to help make the most of the face time for those that will be traveling to Vienna by providing some advanced insight on what will be discussed, and to allow those who won't be there, who won't have an opportunity to travel to Vienna, to hear what will be discussed and what some of the main themes going into the meeting are going to be. If you could go to slide number four, please. So this is the structure of today's webinar, which doesn't reflect the overall agenda of the meeting in Vienna in November, which we'll be hearing about in a minute. At first, we'll hear from Dietmar Müller. Dietmar Müller is whose current position in the Environment Agency in Austria is Deputy Head of Contaminated Sites. supervising and investigate the investigation and remediation of projects, and chairing the Committee on Risk Assessment. Our co-host at the Vienna meeting, Dietmar Müller, has been directly involved leading or managing European projects and coordinating actions regarding contaminated sites, soil ground and groundwater management, including Eurodemo Plus through 2007, the bridge groundwater threshold values through 2006, risk-based river basin management 2006 to 2008, currently involved with the International Committee on Contaminated Lands, and he provides policy support at the national level and European Commission level. So Dietmar Müller will be our first speaker discussing advancing remediation global exchange of track record. After Dietmar, we will hear from Nicholas Harris, who is a project director at Contaminated Land Applications in Real Environments, otherwise known as CLAIR. And she has 20 years of experience within the environmental industry. She is responsible for the overall management of a team of project managers, manages a number of technology demonstration and research projects and industry initiatives. Nicola is the secretary for SURF UK, Sustainable Remediation UK, that is, which is an industry-led forum looking for assessing suitability while undertaking, sustainability while undertaking remediation of land and groundwater. Up until recently, Nicola sat on the editorial board of Quarterly Journal of Engineering Geology and Hydrogeology, and in July 2012, she has joined the VRE Global Standing Panel as a contaminated land expert. Nicola will be providing an overview of conceptual framework discussions that will be presented at the meeting in Vienna. After Nicola, I'll be speaking. My name is Carlos Pachon. I'm with US EPA Office of Superfund Remediation Technology Innovation. I have been with this office for approximately 12 years with several stints in between in other EPA and US federal government offices. And I have a background in science and watershed management, a graduate degree in environmental management, and a business degree in, from Georgetown University here in D.C. After I give you my talk on sustainability, overview of sustainability assessment, which is basically how are we quantifying sustainability at the project level, we will hear from Dr. Bartos, Dr. Paul Bartos. Paul is Managing Director of R-Cube Environmental Technology Limited, which he established in 1993. He is a Special Professor in Environmental Engineering at the University of Nottingham, where he helped initiate and develop their Master in Science in Contaminated Land Management. He is awarded a PhD in from the University of Reading after receiving a Bachelor of Science in Biology from the University of Southampton. Paul was one of the UK scientific representatives to Clarinet, the Contaminated Land Rehabilitation Network for Environmental Technologies in Europe, and NATO CCMS Fellow. Okay, so with that, after Paul provides his overview of sustainability management, that is, how are we incorporating sustainability into remediation projects, we'll have a discussion and question and answer session. So we could please go to slide number 5. Oh, by the way, I'm sorry. At the bottom of slide number 4 is the link to the second International Conference on Sustainable Remediation, which is being held November 14th to the 16th in Vienna, Austria. And as I mentioned earlier, this webinar is in a sense a precursor to that event. If you have an interest in knowing what's going to be discussed here, you have the full agenda from that link. So at this point, I cede the mic, in a sense, to Dietmar Müller of Environment Agency Austria. Dietmar?
Thanks, Carlos. This is Dietmar Müller from Vienna, so good morning to all the followers across the Atlantic and good afternoon, Europe. My part is simply providing an introduction and overview of what happened during the last 3 years. So If you switch over to slide 6, you see the follow-up of conferences and activities we had to move forward the global exchange on perspectives from the U.S. and Europe on green and sustainable remediation. It was the first, which was a really inspiring conference to me. It was the Green Remediation Conference held in Copenhagen by November 2009. It was ahead of the UN Climate Change Conference at this time. And it holds on during CONSOIL, during the ICCL meeting in 2011, and for the upcoming event in Vienna, the Sustainable Remediation Conference, the second international one. So by the following slides, I simply want to bridge over what happened during the last 3 years. So moving on to slide 7.
Excuse me, Dietmar, could I please ask that all non-speakers make sure that your phones on mute are on mute. Please make sure your phones are on mute. There's some noise coming through that's disrupting the webinar. Thank you.
Okay, so I move on for a talk on slide 7. So the format in Copenhagen was very much about starting the discussion between green and sustainable remediation and get a better common understanding, how we could manage to have a reframing for informed decisions. So the conference was organized similarly to the upcoming event in Vienna. So we discussed conceptual frameworks where the European parts of SURF UK and NICOL have been brand new at this time. As well, we discussed practical tools, so from simple indicators like the carbon footprint up to environmental balancing and organizing stakeholder-based course. And we had a lot of discussion about metrics, so obviously there was discussion about the carbon footprint or a more generic footprint to organize complex information. Already at this time, also moving on to slide 8, well, you see how the discussion ended up and how we thought at this time that we could improve technology implementation. So the three big bullets are greening remediation, practicing synergies, and looking for sustainable or green technologies. So within greening remediation, that's, of course, very much along or in parallel what the US EPA is promoting, minimizing the environmental footprint, what is very much discussed in Europe about adapting and contributing to CO2 and energy savings. Practicing synergies is something which goes beyond simply managing contaminated lands, but doing it really holistically in a system approach. So you look out for really go for how to do some recycling, look for renewable energies, whatever. What there for practicing synergies probably is one of the important issues is that something to be organized at regional scales. And as well, that you need kind of a good balance or need to look out for optimizing. We are having good engineered solutions, and we should look out for how to combine it with kind of working with nature. So there are some parts nature does by itself, and if we could combine this with clever engineered solutions, this would be probably the most promising way forward. Regarding technologies, well, there is a general belief, or it's obviously that not a single technology is a green technology. It always depends on the implementation. And what you need to look out is to have really a van and a variety of technologies and look for the optimal window of implementation. And by that, there could be typically routine applications for frequently contaminations like hydrocarbons. You look also out for that if you have a more complex project for longer times, then it's getting more complex, and probably cost and environmental side effects getting more the drivers with the time frame. Onwards to slide nine. Copenhagen, obviously we had at the end the discussion how to follow up, and there was the idea that we want to establish new marketplaces of ideas. So this was starting up for organizing information with the European information system, as well as for the information system of the US EPA. And then we discussed what about the next conference? And we said, we need also the green international exchange. So that's why we came about to look out for the internet seminars to organize our knowledge exchange. But still there is a need for meeting face to face to spread the word. So we are basically using events like organized by others, like Consul 2010, and we discussed when should we have the next sustainable remediation conference. Going to slide 10, this is simply an impression providing some impressions for the CONSOIL event in 2010, also held in Austria. We had there two special sessions on international developments. Even before the CONSOIL, we developed a draft white paper on sustainable and green remediation, just showing kind of a mind map what's already out there and to look for what's the state of implementation of sustainable remediation. Already at this stage, if you look for the bottom line, who was contributing, you might imagine that we already managed to get more broader than in Copenhagen. So there we already seen, besides Surf UK, we had a first additional European network for the Netherlands. We also made contact to Down Under, to Australia, and to the regulatory and the industrial networks here in Europe. So slide 11, the second part of the special session was on case studies. It was introduced by a local case study in Austria, which wasn't kind of a complete case study on sustainable remediation, but gave the impression for more what you could manage in greening remediation, giving some numbers also to make it more tangible. So it was a huge remediation project. You see this landfill site on the picture on the right-hand side where we reduced the waste production, or we decided not to dig for 400,000 tons of waste. So we reduced the total mass to be removed by 28%. And you can translate obviously to what this means for traffic, as well as for CO2 emissions, as well as for energy savings. So we did achieve the risk reduction goals there, which is a prerequisite for sustainable remediation. And what we had there, and which came also by the case studies from the US, UK, and Australia, a frequent challenge is about regulatory constraints and the stakeholder dialogue. So the case studies from the US and so on, you also find in the archives, and it worked pretty well out for having the first idea, yes, that you can make a difference for remediation practice. Moving on to slide 12. It was the last year's event of ICCL. So ICCL is the International Committee on Contaminated Land. It's the regulators network, an international one, and there it was a session about integrating contaminated site remediation and reuse strategies. So we had about 6 presentations and breakout sessions. Regarding the breakout sessions, we set some core questions in before. You see them written, so it's to discuss the current state of practice in a country or an organization, to get information about the challenges which are seen for the future and opportunities to address these challenges. There were about 25 participants to the session A and to the breakout sessions. And where we ended up, simply for the last question, where are the opportunities to address challenges in the future? The summary is more or less, it's really about improving participatory processes. It's about extending the technical options to reduce the cleanup footprints, and it's much about knowledge exchange. Learn from your fellow peers how to establish a quantitative approach to sustainability to make it really practical. And finally, getting kind of a full suite of regulatory policy incentive tools to foster sustainable cleanup. Moving on to slide 13. It gives you simply the outline of one of the internet seminars we held. So it was in real, of course, it was part 4, which we held in March this year. You see simply that we more and more wanted to get into case studies and updates. So on the international activities, so we had a case study from Arizona, and then having the mirror for Europe, it was a site in the Czech Republic we worked on. We also then introduced the new tool we developed in Austria to evaluate remediation options by using a modified cost-effectiveness analysis. And Carlos informed about the developments of US EPA, and Paul Bardos did it for the updates on international initiatives. Moving on to slide 14, it's again the outline for the upcoming conference in Vienna, which will be introduced now by my fellows. So on the first afternoon, we will work on conceptual frameworks. The second day, we will move over to discuss sustainability assessment, sustainability management, and we will have accompanying scientific and thematic workshops. On Friday, we will stick to sustainability management again, and then end up in the afternoon by a roundtable discussion to see the differences and the complementarity of green and sustainable remediation. By the pictures, you see the venue in Vienna, as well as the partners which are supporting our conference. Moving on to slide 15, just to make you aware of the workshops to be held on Thursday. These are 2 scientific workshops of ongoing European research projects. So it's Greenland about gentle soil remediation technologies, and it's the Rejuvenate project, which is along for how to produce biomass on brownfields. Besides the scientific workshops, there will be network workshops. So one we call Surfing the Globe, where the different surf networks around the globe will meet up and prepare case studies to discuss what's in common and what are the differences. As well as Nicole, the European Network on Industrially Contaminated Land, will hold a workshop, and US EPA will have a seminar on green remediation. Yeah, that's more or less the outline, and with that, I hand over back to you, Carlos.
Thank you, Dietmar. We have a quick question you might be able to address now, or maybe Nicola can, as she starts out with her discussion. I believe it's from Alessandro Nardella in ENI in Rome, Italy. The question is, has there been discussion on the formation of a SURF EU? So if you would like to address that, I would like to hand it to Nicola, since it's part of her topic.
I can answer that one now. There isn't the talk of a SURF EU at the moment, but there are European initiatives, SURF Italy forming and SURF Netherlands, SURF UK, and they're all working very closely together and having regular meetings to talk. And there is talk about an ISO standard on sustainable remediation. Hello? Does that answer the question?
Yeah, I believe you did. Thank you. At just the very end, we got that music, which I think... Okay, I think you did, yes.
Okay. So good morning, good afternoon. I'm going to give a quick overview of the conceptual frameworks that are going to be presented at the Vienna conference on the Wednesday afternoon, the 14th of November. Within this session, there's 8 papers in total. Presentations are from across the globe. There's 2 from the UK, 3 from the US, Australia, Flanders in Belgium and Germany, and they are describing the way their countries are embracing or starting to embrace sustainable remediation. The 8 presentations fall into 3 categories. They are presenting on established frameworks and work that has been carried out so far. Then there's development of national frameworks, and then there's some case studies from existing systems across from UK and US. So the 8 presentations, the first one is going to be presented by Jonathan Smith from Shell Global Solutions, and he's also the chair of SURF UK, and he's talking very much about how SURF UK is building on a common understanding on sustainable remediation. And this will be followed by Carlos Pachon on the work the US EPA and the experiences they've developed to date on protecting human health and the environment and lowering the environmental footprint of their project. Then the third presentation is going to be given by Karen Holland, who is the president of SURF US, and she's going to be setting the scene on the work that they've been doing on the SURF work and how they're developing a whole system sustainability thinking for optimizing their decision making. And then they're the sort of the established frameworks. Then the fourth presentation is going to be given by Bruce Kennedy of CRC Care Australia, and he's going to be talking about how they're developing a national remediation framework for the whole of Australia, followed by the work that is being carried out in Belgium, in Flanders, and how they're addressing green and sustainable remediation, and they're going to be sharing some of the research work that they're undertaking. And then paper 6 is going to be talking about how Germany is approaching sustainable remediation, sustainable soil and groundwater remediation, and Hans-Peter Kaczynski is going to be giving a state-of-the-art report on the work that they've been doing in Germany. And then papers 7 and 8 are case studies of where existing frameworks are established, how they're embedding those systems. So the 7th paper is going to be given by Naomi Regan of National Grid, where they're using the SURF UK framework to embed it into their company system, where they're looking at land remediation within their national program of old former gaswork sites. And then the 8th paper is being given by Barbara Mako from US EPA, and how the US EPA are now working with the military and looking at developing a one government greener cleanup system and working collaboratively with the military. So moving on to presentation one, building a common understanding. As I said, this is going to be given by Jonathan Smith. He's going to be presenting a brief overview of the history of Surf UK and how it travelled through from 2007 to 2012 and the work that's being used to try and build a common understanding in sustainable remediation. He's going to describe the existing framework and what the goals of the framework were and how the subsequent indicators have been developed and how this work is now being built to develop further guidance and series of case studies. So he will be sharing with the work that is being undertaken in 2012. Then he will explain how the framework is sufficiently generic that it can be used elsewhere, and you'll hear about how other jurisdictions are learning from the work that Surf UK has developed. He will explain slide 21. He will explain how the principles of sustainable remediation are also being embraced within UK guidance and legislation, and how the Surf UK framework will help to deliver on some of this work. And then he will share with the audience how Surf UK are working with other interested parties and other countries to exchange knowledge and share and hopefully develop building a common understanding across people's jurisdictions for sustainable remediation. So that's presentation one. Presentation two, which is slide 22, is going to be given by Carlos Pachon, and he is going to describe the EPA's policies, the program management, and the technical tools that they've developed to advance the concept of green remediation. He's going to share some of the experiences that they've developed from a national and the Superfund program level, as well as giving some specific site cleanup projects, so giving some case studies and showing how they're measuring the environmental footprints on these projects. Slide 23. He's then going to explain about the EPA's goals and how they're addressing those to clean up contaminated sites and ultimately protecting human health and the environment and how they engage with stakeholders and communities to benefit the use and reuse of resources for a economic and environmental and societal purposes. And from these experiences, he's going to show how they've learnt from the work that they've developed to implement further cleanups and improve on their greener areas and increasing their understanding of their environmental footprint and, where appropriate, take steps to minimise that footprint. So they're learning all the time and developing their knowledge all the time, and he'll be sharing this with the audience. So slide 24 is presentation three, and this is the advancement of are there, and this is being presented by Karen Holland, and he's going to give a brief description of Surf US and its histories and achievements from 2006 to today, and she's going to be focusing mainly on the work that they have been undertaking in 2012, the technical initiatives, and these will include the development of a perspective paper on the integration of sustainable remediation and sustainable development, and how they're looking to publish the results of a study that describes and categorises establishing sustainable remediation resources and tools. So slide 25. The presentation will also describe how Surf US has developed three overarching themes for all its technical initiatives in 2012. So they're looking at how can surf help practitioners better conserve water resources while they're undertaking remediation, how can they better collaborate with other groups? And this is a very similar theme to the Surf UK. They are working very collaboratively to see how we can share knowledge. And then Surf is also looking to assist practitioners to rate the sustainability of their remedial projects to align with other systems. And then she will go on to describe how these themes that they've identified will aim to and guide Surf US technical initiatives moving forward and go forward and share their vision for the future. So slide 26, so they covered the existing national frameworks. Now we're talking in presentation 4 about upcoming national frameworks. So presentation 4 is being given by Australia, Bruce Kennedy from CRC CAP, and he's going to give an overview of the drivers for developing a national framework and the principal objectives to why they want to develop a national framework and the delivery mechanisms that they for the development and its requirements. He's going to explain how what the drivers are and how the regulatory system is different in Australia to, say, the UK, but very similar to the US, in as much as it has a federal and state government. And what is the aim of the national framework? What's it expecting to satisfy? How they're looking to harmonise and enhance the standards of practice across the whole country. So, slide 27, he will go on to explain about the delivery mechanisms of the framework, how CRC Care is going to be working very closely with a new intergovernmental body to help deliver the harmonisation. Then he will describe what are the requirements of the framework, how they've done extensive work with stakeholder workshops, setting up a steering group, and then he will share the outcomes and the progress that they've made to date. So it is a long-term project through a staged approach, and the presenter will share where they are up to date and what is planned for the future and how they're aiming to deliver an accepted national remediation framework, which will incorporate practical guidance based on the need to operate in a sustainable fashion. So that's the new Australian system he's going to share with us. So slide 28, presentation 5, is work that's being undertaken in Flanders in Belgium. And this is being presented by Nick Brunel of OVAM. And he's going to give details of how they're embracing sustainable remediation practices, and he's going to share some of their current work. And the presentation will share how they differentiate between green and sustainable remediation, and he'll give more details on the research projects that they're undertaking. They're under the green remediation, which they identify as focusing on the technological aspects of soil remediation, and the sustainable remediation where they're considering the land use and the long-term planning as well. That's their distinction between the two. So slide 29, the projects that they're currently undertaking under green remediation, they're undertaking literature reviews of the application of life cycle analysis and calculation of CO2 emissions of soil remediation projects. They're also introducing CO2 calculators in multi-criteria analysis for BATNEC evaluation of soil remediation projects. And under the sustainable remediation work, they're developing indicators based on the Surf UK indicators, but making them more applicable to Flemish situations if they are, and undertaking some case study developments. And they're also looking at simulating the combination of groundwater remediation and heat storage. So that's the work that we're going to share from Flanders. So slide 30 is the presentation 6, which is the state-of-the-art report from Germany. And Dr. Hans-Peter Kaczynski of Vegas will be presenting the aims of the different discussions that are occurring in Germany in relation to sustainability and soil and groundwater remediation and how the different stakeholder groups are dealing with this. So they've been undertaking lots of discussions on what they understand, what people understand as sustainability aspects within a regulatory framework. So they've had lots of stakeholder discussions, and they're all coming up with different different thoughts on this. So slide 31, he's also going to discuss how sustainability should, how they feel that sustainability should be evaluated, and looking how they look at international approaches and the criteria set that can be transposed into German remediation practices. So again, there's a lot of themes across this showing how people are learning from others. And then the presentation will summarise the work to date and present the state of the art of the work that they've been undertaking in Germany and integrating the work with international experiences. So presentations 7 and 8 are the case studies. So presentation 7, which is slide 32, is being given by Naomi Regan, where she's talking about embedding sustainability into decision making. So she will be presenting on how National Grid property holdings, they own the large gas or gas works in the UK, have adopted the SURF UK framework and are producing a practical methodology to allow it to optimise the sustainability of its remediation projects across its land portfolio. And she will share with the audience a case study how they're interpreting the 15 SURF UK indicators and producing sub-indicators which will apply to National Grid properties. So slide 32, she will be also demonstrating the different phases of work and how they've concentrated on the development of simple qualitative tiered analysis. And she's hoping to share with the tiered approach how they will provide a more transparent communication and decision-making process, which is a fundamental principle which underpins the work of SURF UK. So that's an actual case study using the SURF UK framework. And slide 34, presentation 8, the final final presentation in the session, is being given by Barbara Mako of the US EPA, where she's going to share how the EPA and Air Force has recently signed an MOU to collaborate and conduct environmental footprint analysis across all the Air Force installations in the US Pacific Southwest region. And the presentation will demonstrate how the Air Force and the EPA are implementing this one government approach to share resources and knowledge and hopefully reduce costs and improve environmental and energy performances. So slide 35, she will then share how this interagency project team will undertake the joint pilot studies and develop interagency strategies and to support each other and hopefully expand the greener cleanup practices across other Air Force sites. And then she'll be sharing about how they're looking to use life cycle analysis and develop further best practices and evaluate the work that they've been doing and to see how they can reduce environmental footprints of cleanup across the sites. So, in summary, the conceptual framework session does show that sustainable remediation is now being addressed globally. You can see this by the presentation. The series of presentations show that the countries are very much at different stages of evolution, but there is strong linkage to already established, more highly developed frameworks such as SURF UK, SURF US, and people are keen to learn from others. And finally, in situations where frameworks are already developed, they are looking to refine these frameworks and develop even further work and work collaboratively to ensure wider stakeholder buy-in. Back to you.
Thank you, Nicola. Thank you very much for that summary. And I'll take it here to cover the second part of the second batch of speakers, an overview of sustainability assessment and discussions. I'll quickly put on my moderator hat as well and remind participants that you are free to ask questions at any point in the webinar by clicking on the question mark button at the top of your screens. And at the end, the moderator will be addressing those questions or also taking it immediately if it's relevant to the topic or needs an immediate answer. That said, I'll take a quick pause and see if there are any questions on the phone lines to the topics, on the topics that have been discussed so far. So again, any questions on the phone lines? Okay, then I'll go ahead and cover my material. And again, if you do have questions or thoughts you'd like to share with us, remember to click the question mark button at the top of your screens so we can take those as they come in and as we get to the question and answer session at the end. So my name is Carlos Pachon. I'm with the U.S. EPA. And I will be discussing the section on sustainable remediation or sustainability assessment at projects. I structured my material by first I'll do a very brief introduction of the papers that were discussed and then do a summary of themes and the topics that were covered. Okay, so that, if we could please go to slide 37. So the first topic are conceptual site or project models for sustainability assessment presented by Paul Bardos of RQ of the United Kingdom. It's a paper that at its core proposes that existing risk-based land management concepts could be easily adapted to understand and communicate sustainability in contaminated land remediation. This is also known as a third generation sustainable risk-based land management. So that's our first speaker on evaluating sustainability at the project level. The second speaker, Paras Erik Bach from the Swedish Geotechnical Institute, will be covering principles and considerations for multi-criteria analysis in sustainable remediation. And this paper proposes the use of multi-criteria analysis as a contaminated land decision support tool by assessing the degree to which a project fulfills a set of performance criteria. The question is, what are these performance criteria? And that is one of the key focuses of the paper. So the third presentation is by Lars Rosen Chalmers of the University of Sweden. The title is SCORE, Multi-Criteria Analysis of MCA for Sustainability Appraisal of Remedial Alternatives. It's basically a description of the properties of a multi-criteria analysis tool, which considers environmental, social, and environmental criteria that are normalized, that are normalized and weighted, or I should say weighted and normalized. And the presentation will include case studies on the application of this tool. So the next, the fourth speaker in the session on sustainability assessment at a project level is presented by Robert Noël Dutilly of Golder Associates in Canada. The title is Sustainability Decision Support Tool for Site Remediation in Canada. So from my read of the abstract, the federal government in Canada has a $3.5 billion plan to address contaminated sites, to address federally owned contaminated sites. The government of Canada is also embedding sustainability principles, sustainability development principles into its programs. And having evaluated international trends in the area, it is developing decision support tools to integrate these principles into the actual projects. Okay, so we could go to slide. Let me check the number. Slide 39, please. These are the second four speakers of the eight that will be discussing sustainability assessment at the project level. The first one is, again, improved multi-criteria analysis in remediation plans in Flanders. Quantifying sustainability by introduction of the CO2 footprint by Nelle Ballestal, Belgium. The CO2 footprint was determined by OVAM, which is the Flemish Authority for Soil Remediation, as the most important parameter to describe regional impacts of soil remediation activities. The presentation describes a tool that integrates CO2 and greenhouse gas equivalents in the selection of remediation strategies. Next, we have a topic on integrating sustainability into effectiveness assessment. Austria's new MCEA tool by Moritz Ortmann of Criminal Credit Public Consulting in Austria. Similar to Canada, the Austrian federal funding guidelines for remediation include a concept of maximum ecological effect under acceptable macroeconomic cost. With the purpose of standardizing criteria for these assessments, the government launched an effort that resulted in the modified cost-effective analysis, that's the MCEA in the title of the presentation. And the presentation discusses a tool implemented in January 2012 of mandatory use as part of the application for national funding at remediation projects. The seventh speaker on this topic is given by Sebastian Schadler of the University of Tübingen in Germany on targeted design and integrated evaluation of land use alternatives for sustainable brownfields development. This paper moves beyond the scope of remediation and factors reuse options as part of the model to integrate land use alternatives in sustainable brownfields development. It includes an iterative planning as a key term and options facilitated by the model. I guess basically an integrated assessment model. The final presentation is provided by Hans Lenders of Arcadis Netherlands. The title is DOG, a methodology for making sustainable decisions in dealing with large-scale contaminated groundwater. This presentation is a result of the Dutch research project on making sustainable choices in dealing with area-wide contaminated groundwater. So we could please go to slide number 40. So again, what I did here, having read the abstracts, I rolled up some of the main themes that I identified with them. So there may be some editors decisions here on how these are summarized. I hope they represent what was discussed. I feel confident that they do. The two main points to make on this first slide are basically approaches in quantifying sustainability. So generating, how do we go about transferring from broad frameworks to specific projects? And one of the points here is generating information relevant to decisions being made at the project level. That includes concepts like action thresholds. And also an important recurring theme is the idea of operationalizing. How do we take frameworks and process them so they are applicable at a site and can inform site decisions? All of the papers, all eight papers in my read, also clearly state that sustainability analyses do not replace risk assessment and management protocols. That is, indeed, sometimes a worryingly thin line between business decisions versus environmental protectiveness and remedy selection. As we know, without the need for a sophisticated tool, mass removal or contaminant destruction as a means of risk reduction is often more expensive and has a greater environmental footprint than exposure pathway management. But the endpoint is not the same. It'll be interesting to hear the papers and see how this is structured and included in the decision tools. Third point is the common goal is applying sustainability policy in remediation projects. So again, what are those action thresholds? How do we know what performance we are obtaining? And here there's a key difference that we see in the concept of selecting the greenest remedy versus greening the selected remedy. This is something we look out for here in the U.S. EPA, and I'm seeing that distinction being made as well between the different papers. An important point here as well are action thresholds. And then an important point of transparency monitoring, which is often also associated with effective communication. So again, this is under the bullet of project-specific tools versus broad conceptual frameworks. We're looking at how project-specific sustainability analysis and tools map out against the broader sustainability goals set out by the frameworks described earlier. So here we see that the common theme in the production or use of project-specific tools is that quantitative analysis is often only recommended after simple screening of sustainability parameters has been proved to be insufficient. So again, as I mentioned, effective communication is definitely an important goal in these project-specific tools and is often linked to transparency. User-friendliness and, again, actionable information is another recurring theme, as well as I mentioned, those action thresholds. The tools help decision-making by providing quantitative values that project managers can take action on. As far as site-specific, that's the goal of all of these, are how broad sustainability concepts can be built into a specific project. So those are some of the recurring themes in quantifying sustainability, transferring from broad frameworks to project-specific decision-makings, and then the development of specific tools that can be used to incorporate those frameworks at the project level. If you could please go to slide number 41. A second group of themes that I organize, or third, I should say, are challenges in quantifying green and sustainable remediation and projects. So defining scopes is definitely a recurring challenge, both spatial, temporal, and activity. The concept of activity, for example, what is defining a scope boundary? The challenge here as far as activities often comes up when there is remediation and redevelopment taking place at the same time. So which part of the activity is associated with remediation, which part is associated with the redevelopment, and then what is driving the overall environmental footprint of that project. A second challenge, a recurring challenge, is the concept of establishing a baseline, be it of one remedy or development alternative versus another, or if we select a specific remediation alternative, what would our baseline be before we implemented actions or best management practices to reduce that project's environmental footprint. Another recurring challenge relates to prioritizing and deciding across multiple competing alternatives, also known as balancing or weighting of criteria. There are many situations where we have to choose to be simple between an alternative that has a lower greenhouse gas footprint versus an alternative that has a lower water footprint. How do we go about deciding one or the other at a project-specific level? So that's something that we'll see and hear across the several speakers. A related concept is that of scale, particularly minimum, related to action levels. What is a minimum level we have to be concerned about taking action to reduce the project's environmental footprint? And even beyond before that, at which point should we stop tracking in the sustainability assessment itself certain parameters that we determine to be de minimis, not worth pursuing. At a broader picture, there's the concept of sustainability indicators, also known as core elements here in the U.S., or at least in the EPA. I certainly did notice a heavy focus on greenhouse gases. I'd say water may be one of the weak points. And I'd say there might be a pattern there between Northern Europe with a little bit less emphasis on the importance of water versus drier regions where they're weighing more heavily. So related to that, again, is the challenge of univariate sustainability parameters, mainly and a focus on greenhouse gas or CO2 equivalent. And so at the cost of other environmental indicators, such as ecosystem services, materials, energy, etc. So we'll certainly be on the lookout for challenges and how those are addressed. Next one is quantitative and non-quantitative parameters. There are many ways of addressing these and joining them so that decisions can be made considering both types of parameters. So there's some interesting insights there. And freeware versus or shareware versus proprietary tools. There's often some considerations there in transparency and ease of use. So a free shareware tends to be more transparent. It's got some quote-unquote open. But since there's not a commercial backing behind it, sometimes the quote-unquote user manuals or tech support associated with them are not as readily available. So there definitely is some consideration in whether we use a freeware, shareware, or proprietary tools that may develop by consulting firms, etc. Finally, final challenge, which relates to the first one, actually, are we undertaking a sustainability assessment because of what is the driver for undertaking it? Is it an environmental protection requirement? Is that why the act, the project is being undertaken? Or is it redevelopment? Okay, so with that, we'll go to slide number 42, please. Looking forward, this is my final slide here. What I did is broke out several of the other topics I could see by what are we currently doing on refinements to sustainability assessment at the project level, and also where is there some general consensus on footprint evaluation, which is a term we use for sustainability assessment at the project level. First one is we're seeing an expansion to include temporal scales, including improvements to the environmental outcome. In other words, if we do a sustainability assessment at a project and then we take action to reduce that, for example, that environmental footprint, what is the outcome look like down the road? Another, we are certainly gaining a lot of experience in applying assessments and taking action. Here in the EPA, we'll be releasing, we are releasing assessment reports and action taken, summaries of action taken, as are other federal agencies. In fact, a colleague of mine will be speaking on that topic in Vienna, as we heard earlier. There's a greater emphasis on regional and global footprints rather than project-specific footprints. Definitely seeing an expansion of that. Some general consensus on footprint evaluation. Expert opinion plays an important role. There are very sophisticated decision support tools going out there, but expert opinion continues to play a very important role, as does the input from all stakeholders involved in the project. So quantitative assessments help structure and organize the conversation, but the expert opinion and all the stakeholders are still the key decision makers. Anticipated land use definitely plays a role, relates to the topic we've mentioned earlier about the driver for the cleanup and what the endpoint is. Evaluations can often be relatively simple, and labor-intensive evaluations are more suitable for larger or more complex sites, possibly even as tipping points for remedy selection or optimization. And finally, to help prioritize options and rank feasibility. So we have several alternatives to address an environmental footprint. How should we determine which one is one to take action on? So that's one of the most common uses of footprint evaluations or sustainability assessments at the project level. So that's what I wanted to cover, and at this point I'll hand it over to our friend Dr. Paul Bardos. Paul, are you there?
Thomas?
Yes, hi Paul.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I'm glad you could make it out of the traffic jam, and welcome to the webinar. So are you ready?
I'm good to go.
Perfect, thank you.
Good morning, good afternoon, everybody, depending on where you are. You could go to slide 44. I'm going to personally give a little bit of an analysis of the different papers that are going to be discussing the management of sustainability, then overview the titles, and then pick out three examples to give you a flavour of the kind of presentations that will be made. So, analogous to risk assessment and risk management, what we've done in this conference is separate out sustainability assessment, which is what Carlos has just been discussing, and then the management of sustainability, which is what I'm going to discuss. And clearly, the approach that we're seeking is one where risks are managed, but risks are managed in a sustainable way. So risk management remains the preeminent driver for a project. I guess we're seeking to find the most sustainable cure. So moving to slide 45, the sustainability management papers will be spread over one afternoon and one morning in the conference and will include a significant amount of discussion. You can see quite a number of countries are involved, seven countries, the US, Belgium, Denmark, the Netherlands, Sweden, Poland, and I guess the dominant number of entries, the UK. And if we look at the broad topics of these papers, in my view, they fall into three broad areas, and I'll give you an example of each of those areas later. Sustainability and how that's used in remedy selection. But we also have papers which are technically orientated. So they're orientated towards remediation technologies, which the proposer says are more sustainable in some way. So technology advancements to help us reach more sustainable remediation techniques. And half of the papers in this session are related to how you implement sustainability in decision-making for contaminated land management, and a number of those are actual case studies. So moving to slide 46, basically there are 16 papers, and I'm going to give you the listing across these next four slides. The first paper will be from Alan Thomas of ERM, and they've been looking at embedding sustainability in contaminated land management. And they're going to give their experiences and case studies. They've been looking at guidance from the UK and also NICOL guidance. The next project is from Geosyntec, and they're suggesting a technological approach to reducing environmental impact for in-situ enhanced dechlorination. Third paper is a Chemox paper on remediation of carbon disulfide from FMC in the UK, and they will be looking at the sustainability of their technique, I think using Surf UK indicators. Fourth paper, sustainable remediation of Dean apples using an in-situ surfactant flushing, which is another paper from ERM. Moving to slide 47. Well, TAL have a very long-standing interest in sustainable and green remediation, so it'll be interesting to hear their approach to green engineering in an overall sense for a site at Bilthoven, which is a town in the Netherlands. After that, there's another case study from the UK, another chlorinated solvents case study. There's a third paper from ERM, which is a carbon footprint case study, looking at the carbon footprint of a large-scale in-situ thermal treatment project. Eighth paper in the series is an in-situ thermal remediation. So this... this is always intriguing. There are a number of people who take a view that thermal remediation in situ is almost by definition unsustainable because of the energy costs for the heating. But what's quite interesting in a number of case studies has been that you actually accelerate the recovery time and the difference in the amount of fan operating hours that you are running with actually means that the heating can be beneficial from a sustainability point of view. Moving on to slide 48. There we go, from misery to electric energy. That sounds like a very interesting brownfield regeneration story from the USA. We have a paper, a case study from Poland for a post-military site. Then a groundwater remediation case study from California. The last paper on this slide is something called Sanergy from Arcanis in the Netherlands. And in the Netherlands, there is a great interest in using the subsurface for heat storage. By that I mean providing cooling in the summer and heating in the winter by heat exchange with groundwater. So Sanergy is basically a concept where you combine the groundwater movements that are associated with heat storage with in-situ remediation. Moving on to slide 49. The final four papers, a case study from Northern Belgium, from Flanders. Very interesting paper from Sweden, which I'll come back to. I think something that we often tend to miss in our discussion of remediation is accounting for social aspects. So there will be a review of current decision support tools from VITO, a research organization in Belgium. And the session will conclude with a paper from Sweden looking at economic project risks. Moving on to slide 50. So the first of the three example papers, just to give you a flavor of what will be in these conference presentations. This is the paper that ERM are presenting on embedding sustainability in contaminated site management. And as I mentioned to you before, their approach draws on Surf UK and Nicol guidance. And they're providing several examples of how they've incorporated sustainability into contaminated site management in a number of sites. But ERM are also looking at this on a worldwide basis, including in South America. So I'm sure we'll hear some of that in this paper as well. And I expect, knowing Alan Thomas, who I think is a presenter, there will be some discussion about this vexed question of the link between risk management and sustainability management. Moving on to slide 51. This is an example of a technology advancement paper, and this is the dechlorination via closed-loop groundwater recirculation. This is the I'm trying to say Symantec, but I know that's a virus protection company. Anyway, they're interested in combining biological treatment with in-situ reductive dechlorination. And they have made a prediction, really, of sustainability benefits based on the pilot scale testing that they've carried out. Moving on to slide 52, which is my closing slide. The third example is a paper from Chalmers University in Sweden, which is focusing on the social effects of sustainability appraisal. They are developing another multi-criteria analysis approach, and their emphasis really is on criteria in the social domain. And they are looking at four criteria: equity, equity of opportunity, health and safety, cultural heritage, and local environmental quality and amenity. This is quite interesting, really, because it's going to be connected to case studies, and it's interesting for those of us in Surf UK because there's quite a close match to some of the categories that we think are important for the social element of sustainable remediation. So, Carlos, with that, I'll close and see if there are any questions on these last few slides.
Well, thank you, Paul. For those of you on the phone lines, I want to know if there are any questions on from the speakers that have presented so far. If you do have a question, please remember to take your phone off mute.
No question. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so we'll go to slide 54. And
there are some questions on the online system.
Okay, then let me remind everybody on slide 54. Paul will be moderating some discussion now, and remind you that here are some topics that you may consider in presenting your questions, and that we expect will be can be discussed. So, Paul, I hand it back to you.
Thank you very much, Carlos. I think that a good place to start, really, will be the questions that we've already been asked. Just following the last few slides. Brad Bradley, US EPA, has asked, what's the current status of solving the problem of trade-offs amongst core elements, which I guess you mean sustainability indicators, when conducting a sustainability analysis? Is there a document or tool that is widely regarded as addressing the state of the art in this context? So I'm hoping that there'll be some people in the audience who'd like to respond to that. I'll make a first response, which is, this really is a vexed question, and along with the problem of avoiding duplication in your indicator set is probably one of the major challenges that we're facing in sustainability management, sustainability assessment. I think from a practical point of view, there will inevitably be trade-offs, and how those trade-offs are balanced, I think, will be determined by the people who are responsible for the site, the stakeholders on the site. So there would need to be a discussion between the regulators, the planners, the landowners, and the other interested parties, and they will have to decide amongst themselves how they're going to find the best balance of benefits across the options that they have. I don't think there's any specific tool that's available for this, but I do know that there's a European research project called OMBRE, the website for that is zerobrownfields.eu, and trade-offs is one of the things that they are looking at, but they don't have any conclusions on it yet. I'll throw this open if there anyone else who'd like to make a remark. Dietmar?
Well, from my side, though, let's see, for talking for Austria, so we had a similar discussion for developing our MCA tool. There was a debate, of course, about trade-offs and double accounting. But apart from, well, that's a nice and important discussion coming, let's say, more from the scientific part, the stakeholders we involved finally had the conclusion that it's hardly to avoid to have trade-offs and double accounting. And so, it was kind of a necessary step forward for having a practical tool to allow for both trade-offs, double accounting, to make it simply work.
Would anyone else like to add some comments on the phones? want to say anything about what you've heard?
I think Brad is on the internet, so he doesn't
have... Oh, he can't. Carlos, there's a question to you from Italy. GSR drivers, is there any taxation system in the US that favors sustainable remediation options? For example, fiscal incentives to redevelop a brownfield instead of developing a greenfield?
Thanks for the question. I appreciate it. So I can't state that there is any one, countrywide, federal level incentive. There is a whole series of them, though. Certainly at the federal level, the remediation cost, the cost of cleaning up a site and preparing it for reuse, if I understand right, is considered part of the development cost of that project. So it would go against, it could be used to reduce the tax burden of any profits it generates. There are definitely local tax incentives as well. At the local level, they are what are called tax incremental funding. That's a means by which a project's future incremental tax revenues are not applied for a certain number of years. That helps in financing of projects. It's more likely that they'll make economic sense. So again, those are tax incremental funding. Can Google that, TIS, TIFs. Land use planning incentives are also, and policy, also pretty common. In other words, land use permitting that facilitates or encourages redevelopment of previously contaminated sites. There are also, what could be called, liability relief tools. There's a whole appropriate inquiry rule here in the U.S. That if all appropriate environmental inquiries are performed, there is a certain level of liability relief or at least comfort letters that are provided to the developer of that site, so they don't have to worry about that, those considerations going forward. And then there are also direct funding by EPA and by other agencies through, grants to municipalities, for example, the EPA Brownfields Program. Right now it's announcing, I think it's releasing $100 million for the next batch, and those can be found at epa.gov/brownfields. So I guess those five main tools I mentioned together are what are, I might be leaving something out, and I invite anybody else to add in or correct me, but I think those are the five main tools that in use in the U.S. to encourage the redevelopment of contaminated sites. Thanks for the question.
Carlos, there's another question for you, but I've buggered up your system, so I can't see any more of the questions on the refresh page. So I just mention this now while someone comes in on the phone comment.
Yeah, there was a question on the phone.
Yep, Carlos, this is Joe. There's a catalog of federal domestic assistance that is basically the yellow pages for all the federal grants, not just from EPA, but throughout the government. And the brownfields grants are for training, research, technical assistance, and they're basically cooperative agreements so that there's cost sharing and both the grantee and the federal government or EPA have roles and responsibilities in the projects. That's all I wanted to add.
Thank you, Joe. We appreciate that.
Sure.
So, Paul, did I understand that you've lost access to the site?
I thought I had deleted them all, Carlos, but they seem to have come back.
Okay. I'll hand it back to you.
There are a number of drivers for favoring brownfield over greenfield across Europe as well. For example, tax relief in the UK. I was wondering if Dominique Parmentier is on the call now. Dominique is the secretary for the Common Forum, and their website is commonforum.eu, and they represent the member state regulators from across the EU. They have regular questionnaires on different issues for the regulators across these member states, and the outputs of these questions are all freely available on their website, and I think that they have addressed this idea of incentives for land remediation and also perhaps brownfield regeneration, which in Europe has a slightly different meaning. Another website to look at for brownfield regeneration tax incentives is cabernet.org.uk, which is another European network. That's cabernet, as in cabernet sauvignon, .org.uk. Dominique, are you there?
I think she couldn't actually attend. I think she got caught up. She was going to try and join later.
Okay, yes. I was hoping she might be there. Since you're here, Nicola, there's a question from Carrie Compton. The speakers referred to the SURF UK indicators. Could the speakers provide a quick overview and a good website to read about them? So I've got a slide in front of me to give the overview, but I thought you might like to promote the website.
Yes, the website you can download the document from is Claire's website, which is www.claire, which is claire.co.uk/SURF UK. And the document that describes the indicators is the Annex 1 document, which was published in November 2011.
What else can you find there, Nicola?
You can also find the framework document on there, and you can find the case study template. You can find a very useful paper that summarizes the sustainable remediation has come from linking to other work that other jurisdictions. And it's all on SURF UK pages.
Could you please make sure you're on mute if you're not talking? It sounds like somebody's machine gunning someone. I don't really want to hear that.
I could give a summary. Have you got a summary of what the indicator report covers?
I was just going to actually say what the broad categories were, Nicola, if you want to talk about the report.
Yeah, no, please go ahead. Yep. Are you going to do that, or am I doing that?
I'm going to do that. I'm just asking again if people could make sure their phones are muted, because there's some interference coming through.
Somebody on a train.
Yes, so. Well, there are 15... different categories. So SURF UK isn't proposing specific indicators. What it's proposing is a benchmarking so that you can look across a broad vision of sustainability to as a checklist, really, to see that the indicators that you're interested in cover the breadth of sustainable development issues as we see them applying to sustainable remediation. So in the environment set, that covers emissions to air, soil and ground conditions, groundwater and surface water, ecology, natural resources and waste. The social element begins with human health and safety. And this includes the risk management benefits of the project, because when we talk about human health risks, we're talking about people, and society is people. The other areas of interest we suggest are ethics and equity. We know that ethics is a big concern in the US, for example, and equality of opportunity. And this is related to the fact that disadvantaged communities may be the ones that are actually living on contaminated land. The three other categories relate to neighborhoods and the locality. So this is the impact, if you like, of the process on the neighborhood and the locality. The involvement of communities and the benefit to communities. And the fifth relates to uncertainty and evidence, how good your information base is for the decision you're making. The categories we have in the economic element, obviously direct economic costs and benefits, indirect economic costs and benefits. So, for example, a remediation project may improve the value of the site that's being remediated, but it may also improve the value of the land in the periphery of that site as well. Employment and employment capital, something that we call induced economic costs and benefits. So for instance of that might be you've made a large remediation project and this has improved the quality of a locality, and because of that other people start to invest in that area as well. And the final category we have is project lifespan and flexibility. These are all explained in a bit more detail in the Annex 1 that Nicola has mentioned, and there's ongoing work in Search UK to elaborate these a bit further with practical examples and case studies. So, another question that we... sorry, Kerry, does that answer your question? Okay, I'll take that as a yes.
Yeah, sorry? I think Kerry's on the she's a internet participant.
Okay, thanks, Carlos. I hope that I've also answered a question from Susanna from the Department of Environmental Protection at Harrisburg in Pennsylvania. She's asking, you're concerned about social aspects. Would you please explain how these are going to be addressed? Susanna, I don't know if you're on the phone line or on the internet, but if you're on the phone line, is there anything you'd want to add? Okay, well, here's a question that I definitely would like someone else to answer. This is from Rebecca Borden at MPCA. Can someone speak to the differences in the MCA and MCEA approaches as they apply to green and sustainable remediation? And I don't want to upset statisticians, so if there is somebody else who would like to make any comment on that.
Paul, that was part of my topic, and I prefer not to venture into the details of it. What I can do, Rebecca, is send you the two abstracts, which have a little bit more detail on the two, or I think there's three abstracts, actually, at least, that cover that topic. And then for those who may also be interested in what the response is to Rebecca's question, they will be, the abstracts will be posted on the event conference site soon. I heard, Dietmar, I think I heard from you earlier this morning that they're not up yet, but you expect to have them there shortly. So the abstracts will be provided. I'll email them to Rebecca. I think Rebecca's on the phone line, but if I may, she's with the state of Minnesota. She's been very active in the ITRC development of the Interstate Technology Regulatory Council TechReg, that's a U.S. State organization, cross-state organization, and they produced a TechReg on green sustainable remediation. So thanks for the question, Rebecca. I'll email you the abstracts, and maybe you can contact the speakers directly. Thank you.
There's a question from another Italian gentleman, Marco Falcone. You'll like this one. You can, I'll read it so everyone can hear it. It's a question to Carlos, but to all professionals on the regulatory side. How should a control authority, bracket, I mean little ones, such as our Italian regional EPA, close bracket, deal with sustainability assessment done with a proprietary software which is not readily available? Well, I'll have a first stab at that and then throw it wide open, because I'm going to be very controversial here and say a sustainability assessment done with a software is really only as good as the quality of the report it produces. And the report has to include transparent disclosure of all of the information that the appraisal was based on, how the appraisal was done, the assumptions that it was based on, and who took part. And if the sustainability appraisal is the result of just one person banging numbers in a piece of software, my personal opinion, it's worthless, except there's maybe a start for a design project. So there we go. Anyone want to argue with that?
Marco, hello. I've seen your name before. I participated in these webinars. Glad you could join us for this one. It's a very good question. It's a tough decision, especially when you have staffing and budget limitations to be able to include this new analysis in remediation projects when you're already maxed out. What I can say is that as far as we are concerned in the EPA Superfund program, we did release a methodology for evaluating environmental footprints. The focus of our approach is focused on the environmental aspects of sustainability, mostly because we have other programs that address social and economic considerations, some of which I mentioned earlier in those 5 points. So you can download the methodology as well as associated spreadsheets to facilitate the number crunching from our site at kluwin.org/green remediation under the footprints section. So thanks for the question, Marco.
Carlos, you wanted me to moderate, but you're so much politer than I am. The last question, there's a question for you, Carlos, on the system, which I think you can address directly from Rebecca. Last question we've got online at the moment is from Joseph Rauscher at CMB in Arlington, Virginia, and he's got 3 points. Firstly, have any lessons been learned related to more efficient renewable electrical transmission to or from remote sites? That's quite a specific and technical question, a very interesting question. Second point he's making is, have any projects looked at regional solutions, impacts across river basins and aquifers? Again, a very interesting question. And have any non-member nations, e.g. non-EU emerging markets, etc., contributed innovative approaches? So would anyone like to start giving some answers to Joseph? Anyone on the phone lines? If you want to give an answer and you're not on the phone line, just click the question mark button, put your comment in, and I'll read it out.
Paul, I'll take a jab at that. To question number one, yes. To question number two, yes. To question number three, yes. I hope that was insightful.
Thank you, Carlos.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, if somebody else is mulling an answer, definitely on, I can't speak very well about efficient renewable electrical transmission from remote sites, although if you use it locally, there's no transmission loss. That's definitely a fact. Regional solutions impacts, and we're looking at the ecosystems and criteria parameters. We still haven't flushed those out, but those certainly are regional. And then, of course, greenhouse gases and air quality tend to be either regional or global. So those are factored in. As far as the last question, I'm that's what this conference is all about. So hopefully there will be folks from other countries. I'm sorry Dominique isn't here because I know that the next ICCL meeting, the National Committee on Contaminated Lands, is in fact in South Africa, and hopefully this topic will be present and we'll hear from a lot of the participating countries on that question.
I can make some, it's Paul Bardis here again, I can make some remarks about the, about other countries. I was at a conference in China a week before last, and there's a significant interest there in sustainable remediation. They're not quite sure how it relates to risk-based remediation, but I think that they're quite keen to, should we say, leapfrog some of the more conservative approaches that have been adopted in the past in the West and move straight to something that Dominique would call a third or fourth generation system where risk and sustainability are considered in tandem. There's also a Surf Australia. There is a network on of remediation professionals. I think sustainable remediation is based in South America that Carlos might be able to say more about. There is the possibility of a network emerging in Africa as well. So there's quite a broad range of activities going on, and many of these activities are now coordinating themselves through a quarterly phone meeting for different networks, which maybe Nicola can tell us a little bit about.
Yes, the quarterly network meetings are the chairs of the SURF and associated organisations. So you've got SURF Australia, Italy, Netherlands, Canada. You've also got SURF US, SURF UK. There is China, which isn't a SURF yet, but they do join the teleconference, and there is Nicole joins the meeting to own association, and also now a common forum are also going to join. So there was, and we're trying to link with South America, as Paul said. So it is growing every quarter. The next meeting is the end of October. Middle of October, the 24th, I think, of October. It's going to be a teleconference where they meet and talk and try and look at ways we can collaborate together.
Would anyone like to add anything to that? So we've kind of had quite a long question and answers, and I feel I've talked far too much. I'd be interested in some broader opinions, and let's start with that third bullet down the list there. How many of you think that sustainability is going to be widely accepted as a tool in remediation decision making? Who's got an opinion on this that they'd like to volunteer? You know, we are just blowing smoke. Oh, go ahead.
Hi, this is Tom O'Neill. I'm with the New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection and ITRC's Green and Sustainable Remediation Team. We've been looking at a couple of different things with it, and I think we are starting to move towards sustainability. I mean, we're relative agreement on the green aspects of, you know, how we can make remediation more green, but the sustainability is, you know, starting to come together. But I'm trying to get my mind around, you know, what are the incentives to move more to the sustainability as I'm seeing on the regulatory side and also within my own organization, which deals with publicly funded site remediation, more the attitude just getting the remediation over with quicker, you know, and not necessarily looking at the sustainability side. Where are we all going with the incentivization for sustainability is basically my question. Ed and Carlos touched on some of the monetary aspects of it. Are we starting to move forward on some of the non-monetary ends of sustainability? Or will people who are conducting cleanups, and I'm just throwing these ideas out there, you know, going to get some relief on land use, you know, restrictions if they're able to clean up the site, or time restrictions if there are regulatory time limits on when they do cleanups, if they bring sustainability into their calculus for how to conduct the cleanup? I'm sorry?
Are you asking from the context of
yeah, the broader part of view. I mean, we, you know, well, we're not necessarily limited. If there are better ideas elsewhere, we can start thinking about developing them here as well.
Would anyone like to follow up on that? Within the UK, excuse me?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Within the UK, we have two main domains that guide the remediation of land. There's the regulatory domain where the land has been identified as causing significant harm, has been contaminated and causing significant harm. And there's also the planning domain where land is being reused. We don't have quite as much land as the United States, so there's always been a reuse of land. Now, in the planning domain, sustainability has for perhaps 5 or 10 years been an important criterion in getting planning approval for projects. And one of the reasons for Surf UK was to ensure that the sustainability of the land remediation process itself was taken into account in that domain. And maybe Nicola or somebody else will say more about that. More recently, our supporting guidance for the regulation of contaminated land, at least in England, now includes a requirement that is implying that they want the most sustainable approach. Nicola, do you want to help me out here?
Yeah, no, as Paul said, it's indicating to apply the most sustainable. It is newly released legislation, so it hasn't been tested, but it certainly is signposting to choosing the most sustainable option. So as Surf UK is well established in the UK, we are hoping that it will support that the legislation. So it is really waiting and seeing, but most of our policy documents are signposting to sustainable practice, and so you would have to demonstrate why you weren't looking at sustainability now, I think, is the way we're moving forward.
And that seems to be the way we're seeing it right now. People are encouraging sustainability, but it hasn't really developed into a forced issue. I mean, we the regulators are not directing people to go that way or creating an incentive program where they would want to go that way necessarily at this point, but we're at least bringing up the conversation by the implication, the discussion at least. So.
I think you may be a little bit further down the line.
Okay.
What I was going to say, Tom, is from the European perspective, the idea is really that it's not the regulator who is dictating a sustainability approach, mm-hmm. but it's a mutually shared wish, a mutually beneficial solution. That's the approach that we're aiming for. So the SURF UK guidance is not compulsory, but it's offering a platform for mutual benefit for regulators, site owners, and consultants to be able to find a better and more intelligent design for their project. Sorry, Nicola, I interrupted you. Maybe Dietmar.
Yes, no,
could
I
give us some comments from Common Forum perspective.
Yes, so I think we're further down the line because it is very much a voluntary scheme that most of our guidance is now. So it is very much in partnership trying to show why you're not approaching it in that way. So you are having to demonstrate how you are considering sustainable principles, sustainability principles within your design. And that's not just the remediation, that's within the building, et cetera, et cetera. So how the houses are meeting sustainability criteria. So it comes down into the how is the remediation being considered as well. So through the whole life cycle of the land development.
And the collaborative approach makes sense. Thank you.
Dietmar, would you like to say anything from the Common Forum perspective and also from your Austrian perspective?
Paul, I just got a note from Dietmar. He had to check out, unfortunately.
Okay. Carlos, we've only got a few minutes left to go, so I'll throw it open for any closing comments that anyone would like to make of any kind, and then hand over to you for a wash-up.
Thank you, Paul. So, yes, any final comments, observations from the people on the phone lines?
Well, in my case, Margarita from Mexico, I only want to let you know that the world information looks very interesting. In Mexico, I don't see we have already started with this type of remediation, but I'm sure the government will start to consider in a very close future. I guess that's all that I have to tell you right now.
Thank you, Margarita. We are working with RELASC, Red Latinoamericana de Suelos Contaminados.
Yes.
So this is a topic we're hoping to channel through that network, and if you're involved in it, hopefully we'll...
Yes, I'm involved with RELASC too, yes.
Excellent. Well, hopefully we'll have a chance to discuss this again. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your comment.
Thank you.
So thank you very much for moderating the questions, Paul. It's greatly appreciated. I think we're ready to sign off now. We only have a few minutes left and a couple of things to discuss. Again, certainly thank all of you for participating. We had about 140 participants between the phone lines and the internet. As you know, this webinar will be archived and available in about a week, usually. So you can play it back. And of course, you have all the contact information for the speakers as well. We hope those discussion questions we presented were helpful to you in thinking about where things are. Certainly, I took good notes of the questions that you asked, and we'll bring them up again at the meeting in Vienna when we have a little bit more time to discuss these topics. You can follow things on cluin.org/green remediation. I think most of the links that we've talked about today are available from there. And we have discussed the possibility of having a post-conference breakout or report out of what was discussed in Vienna. If you can all go to the final slide, slide 57. Two links I wanted to mention, the additional resources. Lots of the resources that have been discussed here have been compiled and linked there. And then also the feedback form, as always in this event and as other events. Your feedback is really appreciated. It really helps us be able to maintain this this tool, this webinar tool, to share information with you and ensure it stays operational. So any thoughts on this specific event that was discussed today, any questions you think need to be addressed in the future, please do complete the feedback form. That's very much appreciated. And I think with that, last slide, 58, some suggestions on how to stay communicated through Kluent, which will include Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn connections to this resource. But with that, I thank the speakers. Thank you very much, Dietmar. Thank you very much, Nicola and Paul, for participating. And for those of you, those of you on the internet and the phone lines, thank you very much. We'll be in touch again. Bye-bye.